Hello, everyone, and welcome to our Sunday morning weekly gathering. It is very, very good to see you all here. We are going to begin by greeting one another, as we traditionally do. And I'm going to play the song that I traditionally play for our greeting, Deborah Pamal and Mittens, Awakening. So everyone, please take time to say hi. Good to see you all here this morning. I really love our coming to church together. Last weekend I was in Fort Collins, Colorado. It was the weekend that we were returning my daughter to college for her second year, and her and Ron left the hotel room early in the morning to go and get a van and start getting things out of storage and moving it to her new apartment. But I stayed for church. I said, no, I said, I want to stay for church. I'll come over after church. And that's exactly what I did. But I really didn't want to miss this time. Sometimes because I'm out of the country or speaking at a gathering, a live retreat during this time, I can't be here. But I really, really love being here. It's one of my favorite times of the week. For those of you who maybe haven't been to one of our gatherings before, we are Awakening Together, an online assembly of peers with one purpose, which is awakening to the true self, which means awakening out of our identification with the ego self or the personal self. We have five core values. And today, during our weekly gathering, we're going to be focusing on the fifth core value. And this is that core value. We accept all forms as temporary appearances permitted through enduring awareness of self. We live this value by honoring all appearances and all experiences while continually reflecting on changeless truth. Now, before we get to the devotional part of our service, I do want to share some announcements. We have a lot of announcements today. There is just so much going on with Awakening Together right now. First of all, we have two new classes that are starting in mid-September. One of those classes is Introduction to Buddhism. And our Introduction to Buddhism class has four objectives. One is to discern simple spiritual practices that are useful. The second is to discern universal wisdom that is helpful when held in universal consciousness. And actually, that particular objective fits very well with our gathering today. Universal wisdom that is helpful when held in universal consciousness. The third objective is to discern ways of being that are the outward extension of inner practice. And then the fourth objective is to get an authentic sense of right and wrong without guilt. That's an important one. Lots of people on the spiritual path begin to get very confused about, how to know right from wrong. Is everything right then? Is it okay to rape and murder and pillage? So how do we find that balance? And so that's a part of our introduction to Buddhism class. It is a 6-week class, and the cost of the class is $120. It will be held on Wednesday evenings, beginning on September 14th. Wednesday evening, September 14th, from 9:30 to 11:30 p.m. Eastern Time, which is 6:30 to 8:30 p.m. Pacific. So if you're on the East Coast and you're kind of a night owl, or if you're closer to Mountain Time or the West Coast, this time will probably suit your schedule good. Again, it's Wednesday evenings, beginning September 14th, 9:30 to 11:30 p.m. Eastern Time. And Jacqueline Eckert is the facilitator. And you can find all of the information about that on our website under the classes menu. The other class that we have starting up the very next day, actually, is True Discernment. That class begins on September 15th. We have several objectives. We have 10 objectives in the True Discernment class. I'm not going to share all 10 with you, but let me share a few of the core objectives. One of the things you learn in True Discernment is how giving meaning produces both time and the sense of self. And if you're a student of A Course in Miracles, you know those first few lessons in the workbook are all about the meaning that you give. And we look a little deeper at that in True Discernment. We use those lessons from A Course in Miracles, and we notice how giving meaning produces both time and the sense of self. We also spend a lot of time in True Discernment practicing with some very useful spiritual tools, including journaling, contemplation, spiritual aspiration, and inquiry. And then we also look at some very common obstacles to truth. That is an 11-week class, and it is our baseline class and therefore our most popular class. It's $220. It will be held on Thursday evenings beginning September 15th from 8 to 10 p.m. Eastern Time. So a little earlier on the East Coast, 8 to 10 p.m. Eastern Time. And that is, of course, 5 to 7 p.m. Pacific. And again, you can find information about the True Discernment class and the Introduction to Buddhism class by going to our website and clicking on the classes menu. So we're registering for both right now. Also, tonight is a big night here in the sanctuary. Starting at 7:30 p.m. Eastern Time or 4:30 in the afternoon on the West Coast, Brent Haskell is going to be here in the sanctuary with Jacqueline Eckert for our monthly satsang. And then right after that satsang, which is a 90-minute satsang, so starting at 9 p.m. Eastern, 6 p.m. Pacific, we have a special member meeting. And our agenda tonight for the special member meeting, we're going to talk about the reduced sanctuary schedule, which will begin on September 1. We're also going to talk about ACIM Gather because it's going to reopen in Pawtucket on a new part-time schedule. And we're going to talk about two job openings that we have at Awakening Together, one for a new sanctuary director and one for a new position, assistant sanctuary director. And then we're also going to share an overview of how decisions are made in Awakening Together. We went through this entire process of sharing this information 3 years ago when we first began, but it's been a long time. Some people have forgotten. We have many new members, and they don't know how all of these decisions are made. So we're going to go over that tonight as well. So again, Brent Haskell at 7:30 p.m. Eastern Time and then the special member meeting at 9 p.m. Eastern Time, and both will be recorded. Also, next Sunday night is also a very active night in the sanctuary. Starting at 8 p.m. next Sunday night, we have the movie discussion group. If you like to participate in the movie discussion group, that means this week is the last week of opportunity to watch this month's movie. And this month's movie is called Love Actually. It follows the lives of 8 very different couples in dealing with their love lives in various loosely interrelated tales, all set during a frantic month before Christmas in London, England. And of course, the reason we watch these movies is not merely for entertainment. The suggestion is that you say a prayer before you watch the movie and ask for inner spiritual wisdom to show you what is helpful for you to see. And these movies can end up being really helpful symbols. In fact, I have found that in certain times in my life, one of the ways that spiritual wisdom will speak to me is by bringing back the scene of a movie to my mind, and that entire lesson that was learned in that scene is instantly remembered. So it's just another way that inner wisdom guides us to the right mind and to awakening. That's the purpose of the movie. So if you would like to join in on the movie discussion group, you have this week left to watch Love Actually. Also, my last announcement for today, as you all know, we are still registering for the Awakening Together Fall Retreat, which will be held in Colorado Springs beginning October 23rd and going through October 30th. And it is 3 retreats in a row. You can sign up for 1, 2, or all 3. The first retreat is Regina Dawn Akers. The second retreat is Brent Haskell. And the third retreat is John Mark Stroud. And, of course, as I've already mentioned, Brent Haskell will be here tonight. So if you don't know Brent Haskell, you have an opportunity to come and get to know him. Brent Haskell is the scribe of 2 very popular companions to A Course in Miracles. One book is called The Other Voice, and the other book is called Journey Beyond Words. Brent's an interesting character when you consider the other people who have wonderful companions to A Course in Miracles as books. The reason I say he's an interesting character is because Brent Haskell has no website. Brent Haskell has no YouTubes. Brent Haskell does not have a Facebook page. In fact, you know, many people have called Brent Haskell a recluse. He does have some course groups in his local town of Canyon City, but beyond the locals, he doesn't really have an active presence. However, he has opened up to Awakening Together from the very, very beginning. And this will be the second time he will be the speaker at one of our retreats. And again, he will be here this evening at 7:30 Eastern Time. So please be here tonight for Brent, and then please also consider registering for our fall retreat. You can find more information about the fall retreat at our website under the events menu. So that concludes the announcements portion of our gathering, which means now we can move to the devotional portion of our gathering, and we have an entire hour to be there together in the heart. I'm going to start it off with a song. And the song that I'm playing is called Blowing in the Wind. And this is by Peter, Paul, and Mary.
Stop.
Why don't we go into prayer? I will begin with a bit of silence until the prayer starts to come of its own. So let's begin. Today's prayer and today's weekly gathering is about compassion, which is also about healing. In fact, properly understood, compassion is healing. Today we're going to look very deeply at how these two things are true. Compassion and healing are one. We're also going to look at how the part of the mind that doesn't want to heal, the part of the mind that we call the ego, likes to avoid that balance where compassion and healing are one. And in the name of healing, it can swing to total lack of compassion or aloofness. And also in the name of healing, it can swerve into so much concern and anxiety and anger about the wrongs in the world that all of those negative appearances are actually enlivened. There's a balance in the middle. The middle is where true compassion lies. The middle is where healing lies. The middle is where we awaken to truth. The middle is not anything the mind can understand. As soon as the mind begins thinking about events in the world, the mind swings to one side of true compassion or the other, always missing the mark. But the heart knows perfectly. The heart is never confused. And so today, as we look at true compassion, let us listen with our hearts. Let us receive the clarity that is already within, so that we can step away from being confused about compassion. And we can realize our true role as things appear to go wrong in the world we see. Amen. All right. So the next step then is our reading, and the reading today is going to come from my 7 Steps journal, and it is called Compassion, and Ruby is going to be our reader. So Ruby, the mic is yours.
Thank you, Regina. This reading comes from Regina's Seven Steps Journal, and I'm repeating, the title is Compassion. Compassion. My dictionary defines compassion as sympathetic pity and concern for the sufferings or misfortunes of others. My feeling is this. In order for compassion to be true compassion, one must also reflect on truth while having sympathetic pity and concern for the suffering or the misfortune of others. Jesus asked us to love our neighbors as ourselves. This implies a great concern for others. We cannot be coldly detached and disassociated from the suffering and misfortune of others and love them as ourselves too. What is the best way to be with the suffering and the misfortune of others? What is the best way to be with my own suffering and misfortune? To me, the two questions are the same. Therefore, the answer is the same. If the suffering is mine, I practice rest, accept, and trust. I rest from the stories of the mind. I rest in awareness and presence without believing the stories. I realize the stories are temporary spinning of mind. I remain still with faith and silent clarity as the stories come and go. I accept emotions that may be present. I accept outer circumstances as they are. I be with what is in quiet patience. I trust my choice to rest and accept while also trusting all things. I trust the universe as perfect benevolence without defining benevolence as a specific outcome. In addition, if there's enough sanity present, I practice self-inquiry. I watch awareness. Therefore, I pledge to show compassion by acknowledging the suffering of others as a genuinely felt experience that isn't to be denied, resting my wrong-minded thinking, including righteousness ideas of how to correct wrongs and fix the outer picture. Accepting my own feelings without denial or artificial justification. Trusting the benevolence of the universe without having the need to understand. watching awareness while remembering that the untouched awareness I am is also what others are too. Being directly kind and helpful when it is my opportunity to do so. Watching my thoughts and actions to see where my thinking contributes to the outer reflections of suffering and misfortune. Correcting myself by letting go of harmful thinking patterns. Seeking ever more deeply to discover truth and abandon untruth. This, to me, is true compassion. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Ruby, for reading that. I appreciate it. Yeah, I said during the prayer that true compassion and healing are one. And you could hear that statement in two ways. One way is that you could hear that true compassion can actually heal the world. And that's true. But the other way to hear it is that true compassion will heal you. As you all know, A Course in Miracles says, the miracle worker's only responsibility is to accept the atonement for himself. The miracle worker. It's not up to us to choose the miracles. But we know there are two types of miracles. There's the type of miracle which is a shift in perception. It can even be a shift in identification. And then there's the type of miracle that is the outer reflection changing. And these miracles do bring joy to the hearts of those who experience them. So the miracle worker would have some part in both types of miracles. In the spreading of light and grace and awakening in the mind, as well as outer reflections that bring joy instead of fear. So how do we be the miracle worker? Well, this one sentence is so clear. The miracle worker's only responsibility. Only implies one focus. Not two, not three, not four, not five. One. The miracle worker's only responsibility is to accept the atonement. And although people have lots of different definitions for what the word atonement means, one of the cutest being at-one-ment, the literal definition of atonement is correction. The miracle worker's only responsibility is to accept the atonement, the correction for himself. That means that as I focus on the healing of this mind, the one that appears to be my mind, the miracles take care of themselves. The miracles happen as I focus on the healing of my mind. In that way, by being very, very good at minding our own business, and I'll talk about what that means in a moment, but by being very, very good at minding my own business, I provide healing for the world, both in the real way, additional grace, additional light, additional awakening spreads in the world, and in the illusory or temporal way, which is still valuable. It's those appearances change from appearances of fear to the appearances of joy. And anyone who has ever experienced a check arriving in the mail just when you need it and you didn't know where the money is going to come from, you know that even though those are illusory or temporal miracles, that they do bring joy and relief and trust. The miracle worker's only responsibility is to accept the atonement for himself. In the last several months, I've had a new habit. It was a habit consciously chosen. It's different than anything I've done for years, so this is why I call it a new habit. I haven't done this maybe even in my entire life, but if I have, it's been so many years. What I'm doing now is beginning my day with coffee and the news. Shortly after that little period of waking up, I switch into meditation, but I'm beginning the day with coffee and the news. And I'm not watching CNN or anything like that. I am using Yahoo to read the news. And what's really interesting about Yahoo, as far as I can tell, is as I read the news, Yahoo, probably through cookies, becomes smarter on the type of news I'm reading and gives me more of that. So I'm going deeper and deeper in the direction of reading about personal suffering. This is what I'm reading about. Stories that don't make it to CNN and probably don't make it to Fox News. And these are experiences that people are having right now. And they're dramatically different from this easy, easy life that I am living. It is fair to say that these are horrific experiences. You know, like there was this one 17-year-old Muslim girl who wanted to marry her sweetheart, and her family refused. And so she did what a Muslim girl is not supposed to do in her country. She eloped. After she eloped, when her mother, and I'm not clear if it was her brother or her uncle, her mother and a male family member were able to get hold of her. They tied her to a cot in their home. And they beat her. And then they poured gasoline on her. And they burnt her alive. Can you imagine being a young 17-year-old girl in love with a boy? And your mother? Not only beating you, but burning you alive because of it? And that's just one story about things that go on in this world every day. This week, there was one particular face that even hit CNN News and probably also Fox News. Most of these stories that I'm reading are hidden from us. We don't hear about them. But there was one story that did make it out. It was about the little boy, Omar. Yeah, Omar, in Aleppo, Syria. About how the building that his family lived in was bombed, and he was buried under the rubble for about an hour before they were able to dig him out. And his image has captured the heart of the world. His older brother has now died. His mother is still in critical condition. But even more, this bombing that he experienced has been happening around him probably his entire life. Hospitals and schools are bombed. There's no place safe to be. So the question is, how do we, those of us who are on this spiritual path of awakening, the spiritual path of learning the difference between truth and illusion, how do we respond to the suffering in the world, especially from our comfortable homes here in the U.S. of A? It is very, very easy just to feel nothing. Especially with our spirituality, it's very, very easy to say, oh, that's just an illusion. I remember many years ago, I was impressed by something that Earl Purdy said at a Be the Love conference. He talked about this exact topic. And he said, it's very, very easy to tell someone else when their house is burning down that it's just an illusion. But can you say that when your house is burning down? I was impressed with Earl's point then, but I did not know Earl's history then. I did not know that when Earl was a young boy, I don't know if it was 4, 5, 6, or 7, but when Earl was a young boy, that his house burnt down, including his beloved, I think it might have been a rocking horse, it might have been something else, but some toy that he really, really loved. You know what it's like to be a child who loves a toy. That was his first experience with a house burning down. So he knew from a child's perspective what that experience feels like. But then Earl had another experience later. There was a fire. It wasn't his house. It was his sister's house. And she died in that fire. And so as an adult, Earl had another experience. And he knows what that felt like. And so when Earl said it be the love back in 2008 or 2009, whenever it was, that it's one thing to say to another person whose house is burning, it's just an illusion. Earl knew from direct experience how cold and unloving that detached attitude is. And that's exactly what it is. It's cold and it's unloving. When we don't care about the genuine experience of others, we are detached in an unhealthy and unhealing way. Then there's another side. What about if we become too involved? You know, we become upset by what's happening in Syria, for example. And we start trying to find the solution. And in the world, trying to find the solution always seems to involve trying to find out who to blame. You know, it's interesting to watch CNN news and find all the different people that are blamed for the situation in Syria. We can blame Iran, and Russia, and the puppet regime, as they call it, in Syria. We can blame them. It's their fault. But if you listen to Donald Trump, you know, he is very effective at blaming Obama and Hillary Clinton. You know, because after all, it was the Obama and Hillary Clinton administration that pulled the troops out of Iraq, which created the vacuum that allowed ISIS to thrive. So we can blame Obama and Clinton. Of course, we could go back further in history and we could blame George Bush, because he's the one that messed with the regime that was in Iraq, right? And put our troops in there in the first place. Or we could blame ISIS, the current bad guys in the world. Or we could just blame the people of America who don't seem to care. There are activists out there who work with organizations that are trying to get aid into Syria, and they simply blame the Americans who don't care, the Americans who are looking away. So we could find out who to blame and then do the opposite of what they did to try and fix it. But you know, when we're out there doing that, even if we're just sitting in our armchair in our living room doing nothing, but still doing that in our head, blaming others, right? What's actually happening with our minds is that we are creating that same attack energy that is manifesting in these appearances, the appearances of the bombing in Syria, the appearances of the mother punishing the daughter by beating her and burning her alive. Even the appearance of another young woman that I read about. Actually, I think she was around my age, so maybe we wouldn't call her young. But she was walking in her neighborhood, and it is a neighborhood where some of the neighbors are known for not caring enough to keep their dogs within the home in some way, even though they know their dogs are dangerous. And so five of these dogs, I believe it was five dogs that on their own are dangerous, were wandering the neighborhood, and it kind of formed a pack like dogs will do. And so this woman was just walking through her neighborhood, and this pack of dogs attacked her. And it was a vicious attack, and there was like a man at a nearby gas station and a woman in a nearby home who were aware of the attack and were calling 911, but were too afraid themselves to approach and in any way try to help. I mean, imagine five vicious dogs. You know, if you don't have at least a gun with you, it would be a situation that almost any human would be afraid of. And so this woman was attacked alive by five vicious dogs in her neighborhood for 19 minutes before police arrived. Can you imagine how long that 19 minutes was for her? That appearance comes from our mental attack, even if we're setting back attacking Trump or Obama or the Iran and Russian alliance or Bush or other aloof people who seem not to care. You see, when we find that blame in our minds, we create that attack energy, and that's what results in these appearances. This is what our spirituality is teaching us. And this is why a miracle worker's only responsibility is to accept the atonement for herself. There's a middle way where compassion and healing become one. The first part of the middle way is recognition. Recognition of the suffering. Not as a truth, but as a genuine experience. Tr- trust me, if you were tied to a bed being beaten and burnt alive, it would be a genuine experience. Even if you were in Earl Purdy's situation and there's a house fire that you're not in, but you lose a beloved family member like a sister, that's a genuine experience. When it happens to you, unless you are so disassociated that they might call it a type of mental illness, when it happens to you, you will feel it. And when it happens to those others, they feel it too. The first step in healing is acknowledging the suffering. This is true even if it's just me worried about the future of Awakening Together. If I find the mind worrying about what's going to happen with all of these changes with Awakening Together, which tell me is nothing compared to what some people are going through. All right? Nothing. But if I find the mind worrying is a type of suffering. The first step is to acknowledge, there's worry. Not deny it. We all know this. Not deny it. Deny it is never healing. So whether I'm talking about my mild anxiety suffering or whether I'm talking about somebody's horrific physical suffering, the first step is the same. We don't deny it. We acknowledge it. But then what's the next step? We don't stay stuck in the acknowledging phase. There's a next step. And the next step has to do with the cause of the suffering itself, the mind. The mind is the cause of the suffering. The mind is the maker of the world. So the second step is to rest the mind. There are so many ways to rest the mind, and different ways work well for different people. One way to rest the mind, believe it or not, is to do nothing but watch it without believing it. So the mind continues to spend. If it's blaming Obama or blaming Bush or blaming Trump or blaming ISIS or blaming Iran and Russia, whatever, you watch it, but you don't believe it. It's like you learn to step back and you watch it spin. And as you watch it spin, you know that because you're not giving it any believing energy, it's going to wind down. You do that with your own little anxious mind about, you know, the little bitty things that are happening in your life that you're worried about, which really do not compare to some of these other things. But still, you know, and Jesus talks about this in A Course in Miracles, right? When he's talking about his crucifixion. Now, that was an extreme example, but that we suffer over so much less. So that's genuine. Compared to what is happening out there, we suffer over so much less. But the steps are the same. If I'm worried about the future of Awakening Together, or if I'm worried about what you said to me and I'm insulted by what you said to me, that's still a type of suffering. My first step is to acknowledge that I am upset, that I have a grievance, or that I feel unworthy, you know, based on what you said to me, that this has created this in me. My first step is to acknowledge that. But then the second step is to rest the mind. And the mind may be spinning out of control about my grievance against you, or my anxiousness for the future, or my sadness for what's happening in Syria. But I can still step back from it. I can be that presence of awareness that is watching it with the realization that this is a temporary spinning of the mind. And if I do not give it the energy of my interest and belief, that it will fade away. Another way to rest the mind is what I call a more active resting. This is what I used to practice when I was less skilled. Now I just practice the watching that I just described. But there was a time when I couldn't do that because if I tried to watch a spinning mind, I would get sucked into it, right? So I couldn't just watch it because I would get sucked in. And many of you may still be there where you can't actually just watch it because you're going to get sucked in. You're going to be in that believing energy, right? So if you can't do the passive watching of the mind as a form of rest, then there's a more active form of rest, and that's self-talk, coaching yourself. You know, when I was in this more active type of rest, I used to say things like, all right, I see that I am very upset, or I see that I am very frightened. You know, I see this is happening in the mind. I see that there's lots of spinning happening. There's lots of story, but I know this is just temporary. I know if I do not give it my attention, it will fade. I know when it fades, I will have more clarity. I'm just going to breathe now. I'm just going to breathe. The mind is spinning, but I'm not going to give it my attention. This too shall pass. Just that kind of active coaching. So there's two types of rest. The passive rest, where you rest firmly in awareness and let the mind do its thing, but you are not caught up in it. Or if you're not able to do that, then the more active type of rest, where you're coaching yourself. And again, this is true, whether it's something in your own life that has you upset, or rather it's because of an appearance out there that you're aware of. The resting of the mind needs to happen. But that resting comes with the acknowledgement of the suffering. This isn't the disassociation, the I don't care, right? There's the acknowledge of the suffering and the resting of the mind. And then the next step is acceptance. You accept how you feel. You accept the appearance. And where a lot of people get confused is acceptance doesn't mean approval. Acceptance means that you accept that it is what it is right now. It is what it is right now. And that's only a fact. It's just a fact. To not be in acceptance is to be in denial. To not be in acceptance is to lie to yourself. It is what it is right now. So you accept that. And the last step is the trusting. And when you trust, one thing that you trust is the benevolence of the universe. And you don't have to understand what benevolence is or what good is or what right is. In fact, probably your definition of benevolence or good or right is purely cultural, purely from your point of view, and not at all correct from another point of view. I recently told a story where I was practicing being as ethical as I could in a particular situation. And then someone that I really respect wrote to me and told me that I was being immoral because of my actions. Or in this case, it was really a non-action. And I thought, isn't that amazing? Here I am. My purpose is to be ethical, and this is why I've made this decision. And now this person that I respect and love is telling me that because of this decision, I'm being immoral. Isn't it amazing how that point of view can be so different? So we can't define what is good, what is right, what is moral, what is ethical, what should be happening. We can only trust the benevolence of the universe. And we also trust that these steps we are taking is healing. Healing us, healing me. And that as I heal, the world heals too. That's the middle way. And that's true compassion. Because that's the most helpful thing we can do. Because that's going to the cause of the problem, the mind, and accepting the correction at the cause. That's accepting the atonement for myself. Now, what about things like giving money or other types of helpfulness in the world? Does this practice of true compassion that I have just outlined mean that we are not physically helpful No, it doesn't mean that at all. Not at all. If we are tuned into the heart, which is where we really must be in order for true compassion to occur, there's a very clear intuition that tells us when it's our time to be physically helpful. There's a very clear intuition that tells us when to give and how to give. We don't have to be thinking about that. You see, if we were thinking about that, oh my goodness, what can I do about this? You know, thinking about that at the head level way, we're not focused on our only responsibility. Remember, I can't be thinking about what can I do to help fix this situation and be only focused on my mind at the same time. That's two things, right? A miracle worker's only responsibility is to accept the atonement for herself. So I can't be thinking about that. But as I'm focused on my own healing, as I'm focused in my own heart, there are clear prompts that come as to when it is my part to give now. And my personal experience will tell you that I am always, and I do mean always, I'm not exaggerating. I am always, when I'm prompted to give, I am always prompted to give more than my little mind would have decided to give. Because my little mind, even when it's trying to help, is still coming from a selfish perspective, because that's all the mind can do. And so where my little mind might give $25 or $50, the heart is giving $250 or $500. Much more than my mind would ever say that I could afford. But I will also tell you, I've been living this way for years. And I will tell you, I give, you know, percentage-wise, I know that I give much more than the average American because I know what the average American gives. There's reports on that. I know I give much more and on a percentage basis. But I've never felt lack. I've never felt any lack at all. I mean, not only do I not feel lack, not only are my needs met, but way more. I mean, my God gives things that I could totally live without. I don't need that trip. I don't need that physical item. I know I don't need those things. I know I could be happy with so much less, and yet it's given anyway. It's given anyway. So I know that if I just practice this true compassion and live from the heart and give when I am prompted to give and give the amount that I'm prompted to give without questioning it or worrying about me, I know not only all of my needs are going to be taken care of, but the universe will bless me abundantly, because that's just what the universe does. That's its nature. That's its nature. The universe is benevolent. So I know I have nothing to fear. I really can focus on my one responsibility to accept the atonement for myself. And I do not have to ignore the suffering of others to do that. In fact, acknowledging their suffering, loving my neighbor as myself, and practicing rest, accept, and trust with their suffering, resting the mind, accepting what is, trusting the universe with their suffering in the exact same way I do it with my suffering, because there's no difference between us. It's the most helpful thing I can do. And I saw a little bit ago, Cheryl, I believe, typed something about, I didn't read the whole comment because I don't read the board very specifically. When I'm teaching, so my eyes will occasionally see something. And Cheryl typed some kind of a comment about, she said, I say, I'm sorry, or something like that. It reminded me of Ho'oponopono. Ho'oponopono, practice from the heart, is just one form of rest, accept, and trust. One form of accepting the correction for myself. Yeah, it's one form of that. But the suffering does need to be acknowledged. Denied suffering is never healed. And maybe you aren't guided right now to get up and read the stories I'm reading every morning, and that's okay. But there are still things that are going to come into your awareness naturally. They'll come into your awareness. That's your opportunity to be the miracle worker by acknowledging the suffering, resting the mind, accepting the situation, and trusting the universe. As you heal yourself, you heal the world. And we all have abundant opportunities to heal. Are you here, Jamie, breathing? Yeah, she just came back from her walk. I have a very good microphone. You can hear Jamie breathing on the floor. Yeah. All right, so let's go back to some music now. This is our contemplation time where you can contemplate this teaching. It's also a time to donate if you feel called to donate to Awakening Together. The name of this song is Bring 'Em All In, and it's about this true compassion, about bringing everything into the heart and practicing true compassion with it. And it is by the Water Boys.
Bring them all into my heart. Thank you.
That's the next song. Yeah, I think that that song really captures probably what my guidance is right now. And again, it may not be everyone's guidance right now, and everyone should follow their own guidance right now. But my guidance right now about reading these stories every morning, I'm bringing them all into my heart and healing myself. But as I heal myself, I heal the world. But yeah, bring them all into the heart. Feels exactly like what I'm doing. And I think I remember Byron Katie also expressing that she does the same thing. And people used to say that Ramana Maharshi used to read the paper every morning. Maybe he was doing that same thing, bringing it all into the heart, right, for healing. All right, so now we are at that part of our weekly gathering where you all get to share based on today's reading and today's teaching. So is there anyone who would like to share? I did notice that Iris wrote on the board, acknowledge, rest, accept, and trust. And then she said, a rat, a rat. Isn't that amazing? By being a rat, we heal the world. Yeah. Linda's saying this is what she does every morning. She looks at the world and blesses it. All right, Jay, the mic is yours.
Yeah, thanks, Regina. Yeah, I generally overall don't go out of my way to read the news a whole lot, but your teaching this morning reminded me of that practice of compassion, and also reminded me of Ramana Maharshi, what he did of reading the paper every day, which I really do think was to do exactly what you said, to bring it in to his heart and open his heart to everything that was occurring. Not to get sucked in to the sympathy, but to stay in compassion. And, you know, one of the things that I did earlier in life was to, I was going to join the military. I was going to be an Air Force pilot. And I went so far as to take 2 years of ROTC training in college and even go to the officer's training course at an Air Force base in California. And I have a strong desire for service, and I think my mind at the time was to want to be of service, so I interpreted it as patriotism and desire to want to serve the country. And, you know, they put us up in a T-38 trainer jet and gave us all these exciting experiences. And there was a little...
For the recording, I got booted out of Pal Talk. I'm going back in now. I hope.
People around me were chanting this, that I realized I didn't want to be in the military anymore. I didn't want to become an Air Force officer. And I realized at that moment, too, that my desire to serve was coming from a place of more of a spiritual service rather than a physical service of sacrificing my body to some cause of, in a war physically, that I was indoctrinated to believe in. So it was an interesting thing to rise above the sort of getting sucked into conflict and moving to a place where you interpret something in a different way. And I kind of liken that to moving from being sympathy to sucked into something you see as suffering to feeling it and feeling the compassion and letting it move through you. And I think that there's a choice we have there to make to interpret that urge we have in an ego way or in a way that allows the ego to be destroyed. It's really one of the two choices. So I guess moving from killing other people to letting the ego die, I guess, is the movement that I ultimately went through. So giving up the mic.
Thank you very much, Jay. And I did see another hand. That hand went down, and I didn't catch who it was. But if there was someone else who wanted to speak, please put your hand up. Yeah. Okay, Gloria, the mic is yours.
Good morning. Am I able to be heard okay? All right, perfect. Good morning, everybody, and thank you, Regina and Ruby, for the reading and the teaching this morning. A couple of things came up for me during contemplation, and one of the main things was that the universe, the benevolence, the absolute benevolence of the universe, that it is natural. For me, when things come up like this teaching today, I'm just returning from home, returning from a trip home where I was able to spend a lot of time with my family. But during that time, I did witness suffering. I did witness suffering that impacted me, you know, at some level, which is why I have a cold now. I believe that connection is there. That's why I'm struggling to bring myself back to health because of what I saw. Regina talked today about reading the news and hearing these stories that needed to be brought in the heart. What I experienced over the last few days, I saw firsthand, and suffering was the word that kept ringing in my mind the entire time. And a lot of what I was doing was attempting to deny the suffering in a way that was not healthy. It wasn't helpful for me to deny it in the way. So when the during contemplation, that came to me that this universe is benevolent naturally. Me being giving this teaching today allowed me to really reassess that entire situation in a new light. I have enough understanding to know that all is well, despite the appearance. I knew innately that all is well, and it can't be anything but that. But certain things that I saw, and even some of the things that I did to try to correct, I was even questioning that. But today I really do understand that I was guided to do whatever I did to help with the corrections, and as well that my main focus has to be on my own healing. As I focus on my mind, as I focus on healing, and that is the way that true compassion is expressed, as Regina shared with the Middle Way teaching here, to acknowledge, and then also the first step, the recognition. Initially, my mind went to, well, I need to recognize that there's nothing really wrong. In actuality, I received that correction today that the acknowledgement was that worry was here, that there was concern, there was worry, no matter how much I tried to deny the fact that I was worried about the well-being of people that I love because of their circumstances. The acknowledgement is now understood that the worry is there, and that's what I need to recognize, as well as the blame part. I didn't blame anyone. I didn't see myself blaming anyone for being in a situation or living through circumstances, but the blame during contemplation, I understood that I was blaming myself because I wasn't there to do more. I felt that if I were there, that, you know, some of the things that I saw wouldn't quite be that way. So I was able to release that blame of myself and again, to refocus on my own healing. So, and that's exactly what I'm going to continue to do. So hopefully I can grab this coal by the bullhorns and, you know, allow that to just flow through me as well. Because like I said, it wasn't cold there. There wasn't a change in temperature. It was my own energy dropped down so much that, you know, it just is room for things like this to come up. So again, I want to say thank you to the universe, to Holy Spirit right now, for giving me exactly what I need all the time to stay on the right path, to stay in the right mind, and to stay open to receive the healing that is here for me and all of us. So thank you and love to you all.
Thank you very much, Gloria, and welcome home. And Lynn, the mic is yours.
Hi, thank you so much. And yeah, it's really strange it's not really strange at all. For like several months, every morning when I would get up and come into this room to go on to Awakening Together, and I would check on Facebook, and there would be a lot of stories on Facebook that were things that were happening in the world that seemed very sad or unjust, or lots of things that appeared suffering to me. And I would sit here and cry. I would sit here and just weep and weep and weep and weep. I mean, tears would just flow from me for long periods of time as I sat here and I saw these things. And I would ask the question, why am I so sad? Why, you know, I didn't feel so sad. It just, the tears just flowed. And so, you know, it wasn't that I was really feeling that sad. I was just crying. And so every time that would happen, I would, you know, bless these people, bless these animals, bless this situation, bless everyone that was involved, blessing, 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 because that's my path. Is I do the Diksha, the oneness blessing, and so this is what we do. But after a while, and I was still asking, you know, why am I seeing all this sorrow? And Spirit just spoke to me very plainly one day and said, Lynn, if you were in any of these situations for which you weep, if you were that child who was starving, if you were that woman who was being raped or beaten, if you were this animal or any of these things, how would you feel? And would you be suffering? And I took that question to my heart, and I looked at my truth and my reality, and I recognized that throughout my life, no matter what the situation was, no matter how difficult things were, no matter how many things were happening, that other people were looking at me and saying, oh, you poor thing, I had not changed. I was still the same. I was not suffering. I was watching suffering. I was imagining suffering, but I wasn't suffering. And then it came to me. I realized why the Spirit gave me that. Was because I was looking at my brother as if he were something less than me, smaller than me, with less ability to be whole than I have. And I recognized that my belief in my brother's suffering was actually an attack on their supremacy as a holy son of God. I was looking at them as if they were small and weak, and that they were somehow or the other had fallen out of God's grace and were not the holy being that I am. And when I saw that mistake and I recognized that my perception of my brother's suffering was an imaginary story I was putting on to an all-powerful being, so that I could see that all-powerful being as weak and small, and I could feel big and strong by feeling sorry for them or helping them out or whatever it was that I was doing. And I recognized that that was a mistake, but I also realized that there was nothing wrong with blessing them or helping them or giving them money or sending them things or whatever it was that I was doing either, because I could also see that even though they were the same powerful, supreme, eternal, omnipresent, omniscient being that I am, they still believed themselves to be in that small and scary place. And so I could send them love and blessings and help in any way to alleviate their fear, until they could see for themselves that nothing was going wrong. And this was a great teaching for me. It really taught me about what true compassion is, and made me realize that true compassion is not feeling sad for a person's circumstance. True compassion is looking at them and seeing them as the whole and holy Son of God and the same equal being as I am. So thank you for this teaching this morning. And here's the mic back.
Yeah, thank you very much, Lynn. And everything that you just described is what I call the resting the mind. The resting the mind is the letting go of the believing. And that is a very important part of true compassion. So again, the four steps that I recommended were first acknowledging, because we don't want to be in that cold disassociation. So acknowledging the suffering, the experience of suffering. Then resting the mind, stepping out of the believing. Accepting the situation as it is, and trusting the benevolence of the universe. And what I am going to do now is just play a song as a closure. This song is from Jesus Christ Superstar. It's called Everything's All Right. And you'll hear Jesus in the song, and you'll hear Judas in the song, and they're having a disagreement. And in this particular song, Jesus seems upset. But Mary Magdalene, to me, in this song, she is the voice of the Holy Spirit, or the voice of clarity, asking us to rest the mind and realize everything's all right, which again is trusting the benevolence of the universe. So it's Mary Magdalene that I listen to the most in this particular song. So here we go. From Jesus Christ Superstar, Everything's All Right.
Try not to get worried, try not to turn on to problems that upset you. Don't you know everything's all right? Yes, everything's fine. And we want you to sleep well tonight. Let the world turn without you tonight. If we try, we'll get by, so forget all about us tonight. Sleep and I shall soon become you, and I'm not you. And it's cool and the ointment sweet for the fire in your head and feet. Close your eyes and relax. Think of nothing tonight. Hey.
People who are starving, they matter more. I know. Don't you know everything's alright? Yes, everything's alright, yes.
Surely you're not saying we have the resources to save the poor from their lot. There will be poor always pathetically struggling. Look at the good things you've got. Think while you still have me, move while you still see me. You belong.
Very much for coming and listening today. And since I know we're all going to have opportunities to practice this, I just want to remind you one more time that we do acknowledge the suffering, whether it's our suffering or the appearance of the suffering of others. And then we rest the mind. Resting the mind is resting the mind from the believing. And one way to do that, if you are able, is just to rest as awareness. This can be called abiding as yourself. But if you're unable to do that without getting pulled into the mind, then there's the more active resting, which was the coaching yourself to rest. You accept the situation as it is, and if you're feeling anything, you accept how you feel. There's nothing wrong with how you feel. And then trusting that this is healing, and also trusting the benevolence of the universe. Thank you very much for joining with me today. I hope to see you again tonight at 7:30 p.m. Eastern Time for Jacqueline Eckert and Brent Haskell. And then at 9 p.m. for the member meeting, the special member meeting. If you're unable to make the special member meeting this week and next week, there will be audios. I will also write summaries. But please pay attention because there are going to be changes in Awakening Together starting September 1. And, you know, you don't want to be taken by surprise. You want to understand what's happening. So come to the member meeting, listen to the audios, or watch for my typed up summaries, which will hit the main points. And those will come out on the daily update. All right. Thank you, everyone, and good day.